Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Crazy cheap prices on the free Spud Shed app.
Yeah, it's great to have your company. It's Monday night. Mark Redding's in for Carl Langdon, and Paul Hayes will be taking you through until 8 o'clock tonight. Our open line is 133 882. We're here for the Spud Shed. Download the free Spud Shed app. Sign up and start saving a spud load with crazy cheap specials. So much footy bumping around, Hayes. Four finals, one very close game between the Swans and the Giants, and footy finals are coming to Perth, and we think the AFL Grand Final not far away either.
Yeah, we're down to six, and look, I expect an announcement tomorrow with the AFL Grand Final. The agreement has been reached between the MCG and the Victorian government. They'll extend their deal, so we're never going to get it in our lifetime. Definitely not in your lifetime, Skeet.
Thanks a lot.
Outside of that, it looks like the pre-finals bye will still be there. The date, the 25th of this month. So what do you think about that? Or do you think that if it's safe here in Western Australia on the 18th and the build-up's right, and I know logistically it's pretty hard, you just get it done, or do you run that risk of waiting the extra week? And we had a bit of a scare, didn't we, on Friday with the truck drivers that come in. How would you play it?
Well, it's a big question mark, because you have to bear in mind the Brownlow medal, which normally takes place on the Monday. There's a chance that could take place even on the Sunday prior to, if they had that break. Also, the grand final parade, does that jeopardise that event taking place if we don't have the bye? So there's a couple other factors that come into play there. And we know that South Australia to WA at the moment, relatively safe in terms of travel to and from. And that means that a lot of Port Adelaide supporters will be able to come across and support their team. We know if they get in the grand final, mind you, that they will have, I think, upwards of 10,000 tickets allocated to them. So there's a few factors there. I get the feeling they'll stick with the 25th of September. The bye, hopefully, WA can make it a fortnight to remember, the footy friends in, and really make everyone proud of this stadium we have and all that comes with it. But September 25, you're right, Hayes, the announcement we think is imminent with the cases in Victoria. It's not a good sign for them. And obviously we want that state to be healthy and footy to return there. You mentioned that contract with the MCG, and they've extended it again. They did it last year. Who's to say in 3 or 4 years, if this is such a big success for WA, that the government might not say to the Victorian government, can we buy 1 year off you in 5 years, or try and find more than just once every pandemic, for instance, that we get a game like this?
We may need a new premier for that to happen, for us to stick our hand into our pocket to make a donation to Victoria. I can't see it happening, because obviously they'd be starved, but look, we get an opportunity, don't we? And what did you learn over the weekend in regards to the teams that are remaining? Is it pretty clear cut for you now, or do you still think there's a bit to play out yet?
There'll be a twist somewhere. We know that's the case in finals, but we can also tell you with great certainty that Melbourne are the real deal and Port Adelaide's timed their run to perfection. So they both get direct passage to the preliminary final. Port Adelaide, of course, play at the Adelaide Oval, and Melbourne await the victor of Geelong and the Giants. They are our news headlines, by the way, for Polaris, Australia's number one off-road vehicle brand. Get Ranger confidence for the price of a quad. Visit your local Polaris dealer today. The elephant in the room, though, Paul Hazelby, is Toby Green. And tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. our time, he meets the AFL Tribunal. What's going to happen?
Well, smartest, dumbest footballer that I've ever seen, I reckon. Smartest with his reading of the play. He's absolutely brilliant. The way he uses his body, his pattern running and his skill execution is better than just about every player in the competition. But he is the dumbest bloke when you consider he's been doing this and crossing the line for a number of years. This is not the first time. There's selfish acts which occur on the football field. We had the reversal. And then at three-quarter time, would you believe, they're in a good position, he goes and does that. And we've been here before, because he doesn't learn. And we should be talking about some of the great things that happened for the Giants, their run towards the finals. Leon Cameron, how he turned this season around from what we saw in round three earlier this year. Jesse Hogan's first final, absolutely magnificent. Harry Perriman was good. Stephen Canelio came back. But we're talking about Toby Green. That's disappointing. And I got a bit sick across the weekend of commentators who said, oh, I want Toby to play. Well, I don't. He made contact with an umpire. We want to eliminate that from our game. It's very clear. It was in an aggressive manner. And I hope he gets 3 weeks. I don't want him to play. I want them to send a message to everybody in football that you can't do that. Because if it's good enough for the AFL players, it's got to be good enough for the younger country competitions, the grassroots level. We don't want to see that. Am I confident that he won't do it again? I can't be, because he's been in this position before. Time and time again, he continues to make the wrong decision. At some stage, you've got to learn. And at some stage, the players, and I can't wait to catch up with Nick Haynes a little bit later, they've got to make a stop here because they'd be sick and tired of him getting all the headlines going into big games.
Yeah, Nick Haynes joining us from the Giants. They head across to Perth tomorrow for their match against Geelong on Friday night. I can totally concur with what you had to say. In fact, if you go one step further, Sunday, the Bledisloe Cup here, if a player did that to a referee, an official, that game, I think, is the great example of how officials are treated. The respect they have is of paramount importance. And unfortunately, Toby Green, a bit like if I saw you at a nightclub and I wasn't impressed with you and just gave you a little clip on the shoulder as I went through, just shouldn't be allowed, shouldn't happen. He deserves what he gets, in my mind.
There's no argument, is there? He had the chance to go around. He was clearly frustrated, angry.
What about Nick Riewoldt and co saying the player has rights and the player has to also bear in mind the umpire has to get out of the way? There's no excuse. I cannot believe the rhetoric from some of the former players, albeit we respect their opinion, but that's why we get your calls on 133-882. What is your opinion, Toby Green? And bear in mind, that's Hayes's slaps and sledges all in one for Sullivan Logistics. 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. And of course, Sullivan Logistics and CalExpress, your trusted door-to-door express country freight service. Visit calexpress.com.au. Let's get straight to the phones. They are ringing loud and strong. Let's go to Mark in East Fremantle. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, there seems to be a common theme when the Giants play in the finals. That's Toby Green up before the tribunal all the time. I think he's a liability to that team, and I think the Giants are better off without him.
They're not on the field when he's playing. He's magnificent. And look, they clearly hold him in great regard. He's the captain of that football club with Stephen Cornelio being out. He's been leading him and he's been doing a really good job. And a lot of people have been talking to him in a more positive way than we have in the past. And perhaps you thought he's learning. And then he goes and does that on the big stage in a position where there was nothing to be gained from that. What do you do? What's to be gained at three-quarter time or any time in the game when you make contact with an umpire?
I try and go back in time and think, and albeit the indiscretions of the modern players, far less than what happened, say, back in the day when, say, David Rees-Jones, who I'm sure there'd be people that would see him back in the day and think, oh, that's just how he played the game and he lived on the edge on the football field. But he made some mistakes when it comes to suspensions and Dermot Brereton. And there's a lot of players that
Craig Williams
crossed the line, absolutely. But you don't generally sack the player, as Mark's suggesting, get rid of Toby Green because he's such a valuable on-field commodity. But they have to find a way to get through to him, to find that line to step where he can still have that aggression, still have that fiery nature, but not have the brain fade. And that's exactly what it was on the weekend. Let's head to David now, who joins us from Bayswater. Hi, David. How are you going? You there, David? Try and get David up in just a second. But, yeah, there's no question that over the past 48 hours, what we've seen in terms of the fans, and particularly parents, and you've got kids and those coming through playing junior football, this is the message the AFL, I think, tomorrow, the tribunal itself, will send to the likes of Toby Green. David joins us now from Bayswater. Hi, David. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Terrific.
No, I think Toby Green has just gone too far. I mean, of course, I'm a bit selfish. I'm a Cats fan. I've already bought my tickets. So without Toby Green, our chances are greater. But now he walked into the umpire. He's been getting out of the way with the crowd. Not getting away because he's had a few fines along his career, which is not good. He's a good player, but he needs to get his head screwed on properly.
He's a great player. But that doesn't come into it. Shouldn't even come into it. And this comment that the commentators do make about, oh, we want him to play.
What about the Toby Green tax that everyone talks about?
Yeah, it shouldn't be an issue, and it's not an issue. Do I want him to play? No, I don't, because of what he did and the message that needs to be sent. And as you said, the AFL get one chance here to send a message to everybody. Everybody's watching. Every league around the country is watching to see how the AFL handle this. They need to get it right. And for mine, it's 2 to 3 weeks. Probably 3 weeks. That sends the message.
Yeah, Glenn Jakovich mentioned 12 weeks, which appeared the other end of the spectrum. But I think his overall message was definitely, look, let's go harder than softer on someone like this. Give us a call on the open line, 133-882. Your thoughts on Toby Green and what might transpire there. And, of course, we're talking after the break as well about ticket prices and who's going to go to the footy on Friday. How many people will we get to see the Cats and the Giants, the first time two non-WA sides playing in a final in this state? This is Sports Day. Mark Reddings, Paul Hazelby, 16 past 6, more shortly.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Yes, we're rolling through a Monday night edition of Sports Day, Mark. Greetings in for Carl Langdon. And Paul Hayes will be taking you through until 8 o'clock tonight. Interesting to see if we have any callers on our open line, 133-882, that believe Toby Green should get off at the AFL Tribunal tomorrow. Let's go to the lines, find out. Sean's in Baldivis. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Yeah, just two things. One, so Toby Green, I just think he was completely... And when players first started breaching, the AFL could have come down hard and they didn't. And then what happened? You had bloody coaches doing it. You had WAGs doing it. You had the whole lot. It would have been such an easy fix for them when the first players did it. Just give them a massive...
Just so cutting Green, out there, Sean.
I was going to say, number two... I've umpired other, local sports as well. I just think for umpires for all sports, you want to just instill the understanding you never, ever, ever touch the umpire. It's as simple as that. And that's what it is. It's not the AFL. It's the local leagues of every sport which is affected if they give a really soft decision here.
Agree.
Yeah, good call. How do rugby do it? When you talk about their referees, there's so much respect towards them from the players, but maybe even from the crowd. I think they give a lot more. And look, they make a lot of decisions that the crowd would like or they wouldn't like throughout the game, but there just seems to be that respect component that we lack, particularly in the AFL. And we only have to go back until recently with, I was just watching a game, Dean Margetts' last game. There's a lot of abuse and the build-up to the game, it was all about him and that the Fremantle fans were going to give it to him. Why can't we get to where they are?
I think we treat it we do it as a bit of a sport in itself, a bit of fun, but obviously there's a darker side to that with how it affects the umpires. But we're talking the physical element here of and invading their space. And I think you're right, rugby union and NRL I watch a lot of as well. There isn't as much... in your face compared to, say, soccer, football, you see it so regularly and it's embarrassing side at times, particularly over in Europe, what happens in those codes. I think the AFL, by and large, is pretty good, but we have seen the Greg Williams case going back many years. We've seen even Tom Hawkins, just the hand on umpire Dean Margetts at Geelong, a one-week suspension there. So I have no doubt that the AFL will take the right step tomorrow, the tribunal, and dish out a penalty, which will discourage that moving forward. Mick is in Willerton. Hi, Mick, how are you going?
Hey, guys, how are you going? I just wanted to ring up to say that based on the NRL thing that you guys are talking about, the AFL needs to change it and bring back a bit more respect. So umpires are to be assessed as sir by any player. As soon as you're touched, you're sent off for 10 minutes. And then finally, the umpires don't address the players by their name anymore. They address them by their numbers. They've all got them. And that takes out this mateship type aspect and starts to build a little bit of respect back into the game for the umpires at all levels.
Thanks, Mick. Look, I don't disagree with what you say. The only thing is, I think, and you've been out there, hey, so you can tell me whether this doesn't happen, but there are some umpires that you can have a bit of repartee with, a light-hearted chat with, and some you can't, some you do.
There's some you come through the system with. So, the under-18s, Dean Margetts was a part of that. So you know them pretty well and you do have that banter going forward. But that's all it was. It was banter, it was light-hearted. But that wasn't on the weekend with Toby Green. That turned nasty. And he's not the only one. We had early in the year McCarthy from the Giants actually storm into the room and give a serving to the umpires. He got a $20,000 fine. And perhaps you look back at that and you go, well, $20,000 is a big financial sanction, but could he have got more to be sent a message from the AFL? And they had a meeting just last week with a lot of the stakeholders about umpire engagement, and it wasn't going down the right path, and they wanted to make some changes to that. So I think as a collective, our industry, we can get a lot better here.
Yep, good call, Mick. Thanks for your contribution tonight. Wade's in Riverton. Hi, Wade.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Paul. Just a question. I certainly agree that Toby Green should go. Umpires need to be a protected species, and the games, whatever sport it is, there's a high level of frustration with the umpires at times, and they probably need to come up with strategies for Toby and any other players. But can you remember whatever happened to Colin Croft when he shoulder barged that umpire in that cricket game all those years ago?
I do remember the incident. I don't remember the penalty. In fact, if there was one, Wade, but I do recall that. And you'd have to say a little bit like the Toby Green scenario. From my memory, the vision showed that Colin Croft knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh, absolutely. Anyway, thanks, guys. Love the show.
Good on you, Wade. Thanks for the contribution. Paul's in Duncraig. Hi, Paul.
Hey, boys. Mate, I've never played AFL. I'm a union player, or yep. was a union player, and I just can't believe it. It's absolutely disgusting. We call our umpires sir, our referees sir. There's absolutely no place in the game. No one is bigger than the game that they can do that sort of, you know, palaver.
So when is that instilled in rugby union players and officials? Is that from the early age?
From under eights, from before you even take the field. It's you know, you just can't do it. There's no room for it. I'm not sure if you remember a game. There was a game between New Zealand and South Africa. I think it might have been in Africa, and someone came onto the field and grabbed the umpire, and Richie McCall belted 7 shades of so-and-so out of him. There's just no place for it.
No, totally agree. And it just seems like rugby and those who've grown up with that in their lives have a similar sentiment. Thanks for your call. Corey in Meadow Springs also wants to bring rugby into the conversation. Hi, Corey.
Hi, mate. Echoing the last caller, I can remember I played junior but for WA, and everything was served. The one big difference that we had, there's only one referee, but the only person that could ever talk to them, and the referees were very hard on it, was the captain of the side. So I was the captain of the side. If I had an issue with a decision or something like that, I could go up and talk to him. If one of my players did it, the umpire would just turn around and go, I'm not talking to you, go away. There's nothing that you can say that's going to help me. Go talk to your captain. They would come to me, and if it was something that I thought about, then we could talk about it later. But at the end of the day, he only had one person. Whereas I see when I'm watching the AFL, there's lots of people talking to him and getting into the ear, and there's 3 of them. So it's you know, a mass cycle. Saying, hey, look, we disagree with how you're interpreting this. You got the one person trying to voice your opinion. And that's what we had in union. It's the one guy going up saying, this is what's going on. But it is, it's always yes, sir, no, sir, 3 of us, full, sir.
Got any, Corey? Just
do anything differently.
Losing your line there for a second or two, but got your call. Thank you so much. You make some really good points. And we talk about opinions and we talk about being knowledgeable in these scenarios. Well, on the line now, Dean Margetts, of course, recently retired WA-based AFL umpire, joins us to, I guess, add to the conversation. Hi, Dino, how are you going?
G'day, Scott. G'day, Hayes. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I've just been driving home listening to your dialogue around sort of respect with umpires. And whilst I can't really talk about the Toby Green per se, I think player rapport with umpires is at an all-time high, quite frankly. And I don't think we aspire to be called sir and that sort of stuff. I think right now it's in a pretty good place with interaction with players. And, you know, the last pre-season, we had close to 500 club visits, you know, with clubs. So I think respect and rapport with umps and players is at an all-time high, to be honest.
What about fans, Dean? I'm interested in that across your career. Do you think it changed at all?
Yeah, I certainly think the last 5 or 10 years have got pretty full on for me personally. I guess, you know, the more time you spend in the game, Hayes, people get to know you more. I guess I was the face of footy over here for a long period of time. And I guess the social media stuff certainly got pretty intense for me towards the back end of my career, which is pretty full on. I don't need to go through all the details of what I get sent, but certainly on field sort of stuff, I think it's at a really good place right now with players and umpires. I really believe that.
Dino, just quickly, when it comes to player contact with umpires, and we won't touch on what happened with Toby Green, but certainly other players I've seen, even at games, whether it's always accidental, but there seems to be, going back a few years ago, players would get in trouble for even accidental contact. There seems like you've reached a pretty happy medium in that department now.
Yeah, I think we accept that. You know, we're in a contact sports skate where there's, you know, 36 players running around all crazy directions, you know, and sometimes we're going to get in the way and we sometimes get knocked. And if they just say, sorry, umpire, it's all good, or you're right, don't know, and we just move on, I think that's a really good thing. There are examples where, obviously, my incident with Tom Hawkins a few years ago where he sort of, you know, swiped him in, honestly, don't touch me. And I think they've sent a pretty strong message there as far as that goes. But as one of the callers mentioned, it's important that we send a pretty strong message from the AFL level so it filters right down to community, because ultimately we're the police on the field and we don't go touch the police when we don't like a decision we get on the roads or whatnot. So I guess we're no different than in the green shirts on a weekend.
Hey, Dean, last one. Just going back to the supporters, do you think because in the game of AFL there's so much grey area with all the decisions that you're making compared to some of the other sports that maybe you are harder done by the supporters?
Yeah, I think so. And I guess sometimes supporters, share their frustration on the way they would like the game to be umpired versus the way we're instructed to umpire. Hey, that's the lack of education potentially. And I heard you speaking about NRL refs and the respect there. I think the best thing about the NRL is they get to blow the whistle and say, Paul, can you come in? Mark, can you come in? Let's have a conversation. Can you call it? You walk off. Whereas in footy, we don't get the chance to do that. It's all 360, so fast paced. So we're looking forward to maybe quarter time breaks to have those conversations. Whereas NRL, they get to stop it, have the conversation, and we get to hear it. And it's really quite respectful and down to earth, which is probably the one thing we lack in AFL.
You would have been happy with your send off, wouldn't you? When you did go off the game, the Dockers won, and I thought it was a beautiful moment.
Yeah, no, it was really nice. I mean, it took 377 games for me to get a standing ovation from the Dockers faithful, but you know what? It was worth every 20 years I had out there for that one moment, so I did appreciate it. It was a special day, and, you know, to have players shake my hand, and you would have noticed Josh Kenny sort of chased after me and shook my hand, because I've umpired, as you know, half these players since they started, like, you know, Mundy and Hearn and Kennedy, and, you know, when they come on the scene at 17 years of age, you know, I've had their whole lives on footy, so I think that mutual respect was quite evident, and I really appreciated it.
Hey, Dino, just bear in mind, the Dockers did win that game. If they had lost, I'm sure the standing ovation might have turned the other way around. But we do appreciate your call. We love your input. And thanks for giving us an insight into what umpires go through on the field. Demar Getz, retired AFL umpire, and certainly one of the stalwarts still in the WA Footy Commission, teaching the young umpires coming through the ranks exactly what's required. Great to have him on the line as part of our open line, 133 882. We'll go to Alex in North Lake now. Hi, Alex.
G'day, guys. I wonder if you've looked at the 2021 Tribunal guidelines. Because in the guidelines, in Section 4F, they describe contact with an umpire. One, intentional contact with an umpire. Contact with an umpire that is aggressive, forceful, demonstrative, or disrespectful will be deemed intentional, and the player will be directly referred to the tribunal. But interestingly, two, unreasonable or unnecessary contact with an umpire. Where contact with the umpire is not aggressive, forceful, demonstrative, or disrespectful, but could otherwise be regarded as intentional, it will be classified as unreasonable and unnecessary contact with an umpire and subject to a fixed financial sanction. So,
where do you think,
be line ball at the tribunal.
So where do you think this one falls? In the latter for the final, or straight to the other category?
Well, do you think it was aggressive, forceful, demonstrative, and disrespectful?
Is intentional. He had another option.
But it's in
demonstrative.
But the second one is intentional as well.
Depends on your view on demonstrative, but it could fall into that category.
It was avoidable.
Yeah, but it's
aggressive. Like, there is contact, so you've actually made contact. That's an aggressive move. Now, there's different forms of aggression. You could go, you know, sumo wrestling type or John Worsfold type of bump, but there is an aggressive move made towards somebody else's space.
Alex, I think you do make a point that the lawyers and those that are going to get involved in this tomorrow for the Giants, they'll be heading down that path. So we really appreciate you spelling that out. It's going to be a fascinating hearing. Nice and early 7 a.m. Perth time. But Toby Green, I'm sure, will be trying to get every letter of the law looked at in his favour. But it remains to be seen. Certainly the public opinion doesn't bode well for him. Stay with us. Plenty more to come on Sports Day. In fact, coming up next, we're going to check in with the Giants. Nick Haynes, the GWS defender. His team heading to Perth tomorrow to take on the Cats on Friday night. He's up next on Sports Day. It's 26-7, Mark Reddings alongside Paul Hazelby. Welcome back to Sports Day. Mark Reddings, Paul Hazelby, Monday night. Time to roll into our player of the round for Select Car Craft, car-craft.com.au. And the Giants are heading to Perth after beating the Swans by a point. Nick Haynes, 70 disposals, celebrating with a victory, and his teammates, no doubt, over the weekend. Nick, thanks for joining us on Sports Day.
G'day, boys. Thanks for having us.
Terrific. And that result, I'll tell you what, the hearts were pumping around Australia as neutral observers. What was it like in the middle for the last 5 minutes as the Swans pressed and pressed and pressed?
Yeah, I didn't have time to get nervous because the ball was coming in that much. So just hanging on for dear life. And thankfully we had a good enough lead in the first half that we were able to hold on. But yeah, probably didn't want to give them that many chances in the last quarter that we gave them. So a bit of luck went our way, but it was set up by a good first half, so we'll take it.
It's not ideal, though, is it, when you concede 65 inside 50s? You must have gone to town on that from a review process. Did anything stand out?
Well, a little bit more towards probably our ball movement. So, you know, if we rush it in there too quick and then don't get time to set up behind the ball and defend, then it's going to go one way all the way to the other end. So we know Sydney love to go through the middle this year. They've changed their game plan and they've done it really successfully. So they're one of the most exciting ball movement teams. And yeah, they showed that on the weekend as well.
Now, we should be talking about the team and Leon Cameron and Jesse Hogan's performance, but unfortunately, it's happened again. Toby Green has stolen the limelight. Whether he does that on purpose, I'm not quite sure. But you must be disappointed as a club to be put in this situation again. I know you love him and he's your captain, but he's been there before, and as a leadership group, I reckon you would have told him a few times to pull his head in.
Yeah, it's always that funny one with Toby. We love the way his spirit and his aggression towards the game, and he's our spiritual leader, and we love him in that sense. And we all know what type of year he's had. He's all Australian. That's the way he plays. But yeah, there's that line, and he steps on that line a lot of the time. So he knows deep down he loves this club and wants to be playing finals, and he's bitterly disappointed if it doesn't go his way. But yeah, we love the good things about him, and when it goes bad, obviously we don't love that, but yeah, we'll see what happens, what comes out of the findings, and fingers crossed that he'll be okay.
So, Nick, where were you three-quarter time? We're watching on the monitors. Did you know the incident had occurred? When was the first you found out about it?
No, not till after the game. I was pretty close to the proximity to the incident, but obviously, you know, whatever, you have to look at it pretty closely to get a good visual. Looking at being close by, or no words were exchanged, or nothing was brought to my attention from that close range. So not till after the game where, you get your phones back at the thing, you're scrolling through, that you'll find something in there. But, it's one of those things that we just got to leave to the high beings to look after, and all we can do is pray that, it got the good result for us.
Just one more on Toby and his mindset. Have you spoken to him? Has he had a look back at the vision and think, gee, this doesn't look as good as what I'd like? Or have you been able to get an idea of how he's coping with what's a fair bit of pressure? Because obviously umpire's sacrosanct and the game needs to make a stand if it's appropriate.
He's coping fine. And obviously he'll be looking to see what happens over the next few days or tonight or whenever it is. I'm not sure when it is, but he'll be on edge, no doubt. And because he wants to play finals, he loves his club and he performs well at the high level, and he's one of the leaders, so there's no doubt he'll be a bit anxious about the result. We'll want to be out there this weekend, but we'll let the higher people at the club deal with him and talk about that stuff, and all we can do as players is just support him and hope for the best.
All right, let's talk about some of the positives. And look, I watched you play early in the year against Fremantle. I must admit, I put my hand up and said, look, I think they need change. I think it's the end of an era maybe at your football club. But what you've been able to do, and Leon Cameron in particular as the coach, to turn that around, what has he done that's been able to generate a new lease on life for a lot of the players and a new game plan that's worked really well?
Yeah, I guess first after that round three, he just opened up to the leaders and the older people, and we just sat down for a good few hours and had a good honest chat about where we're at and about each other's feedback as well, and talk about where each other's at. And I think we just challenged each other as players and as leaders and as coaches to, we're not going to stand up for this and we're going to challenge each other higher. So in hindsight, it was probably a good thing that we ended up being 0-3 and our season kind of started up the trajectory from there. So he's been great this year in that honest feedback, but then also when we're doing something well, he pumps us up as well. And I think all the young boys that have come into this team have really played their role, and he's given them confidence to come in and give them belief that they can play at AFL level. So you see all the young players now coming through the ranks, coming through and having an immediate impact, not taking a few years to get settled, but having an immediate impact, and that's a lot to do with his confidence he's given these players.
There's so many storylines this time of year. I want to talk about the Jesse Hogan storyline, because he came to Perth. It didn't work out through his own doing. He was basically forced out of the football club. He got thrown a lifeline from your club, and by all reports, he's taken it. He's trained hard, and he's deserved a lick of the ice cream on the weekend. He was good, 2 goals and the contested marking. It's probably rewarded the club to win a final like that on the back of him having such a good game.
And in tears after the game as well, Nick.
Yeah, he's He obviously had been on a big journey, long journey for him, and he came to the club, and you could just tell straight away that he was here to here to work and here to fit in. So he's had a few little niggles on the way with some soft tissue, but the way he's applied himself and his mindset towards the group and the club's been fantastic. And I think ever since he's been here, what he's done, that's the reward he gets on the weekend for sticking fat. So you can tell he's been putting in the work, and when you put in the work, you get a good lick at some stage. So we're really happy as in as players and as a club that he was able to do that on the weekend, and we're looking forward to keep doing that over the years to come.
In contrast, down back, a player that I'm really impressed with. I know Buddy kicked 3 on the weekend, kicked 4 back in round 18, but I've got to say Sam Taylor impresses me every time I see him. He does a really good job, and I just regard him so highly. I'm sure you do internally as well.
Yeah, for a young key back, obviously, you get a few key backs that might be a bit docile, or you might have a key back that's an interceptor that can't defend well as one-on-one, but he's the full package, so he can do it all. He can play on the big man and beat him easily, but then also he can come off and chop out and take some intercept marks as well. So he's a complete package, and I've been super impressed from him ever since he stepped foot in the club. I knew he was going to be a star, and he's still young too, so... I'm happy that he's in the back line taking all the big dogs, and it's a pleasure to watch close up each week.
We're speaking to Nick Haynes, Giants defender on Sports Day. Now, ordinarily, playing Geelong under the old style of home and away and earning home ground rights, you'd be going down to their dunghole and trying to get a victory in Geelong. But you're across to Perth. You're looking forward to, I guess, a neutral venue in more ways than one, although you did beat the Cats at the Cattery not so long ago.
Yeah, I think it's our fourth state we'll be entering in the last 10 weeks. So, I don't know what you do, but yeah, it's good. I love going to Perth, and it's got that closest thing to MCG feel, Perth. So, massive crowds. I love that LED lighting they put on. They put on a good show, and it's perfect for finals footy. So, we're looking forward to getting over there tomorrow and settling in and giving it a red hot crack on Friday night.
We hope it's better than round 3 when you play the Fremantle Dockers, because that wasn't great. But last question for me. Stephen Keneally, your captain, talk about storylines. He's had some storylines this year for not the best reasons, because he's been out injured. He's been frustrated not to get back into that side, but he was back. And as the leader of your team, it must have been great for him to get through.
Yeah, obviously, Skipper, loves having him out there. We walk taller when he's out there. He dressed the group before we ran out and really settled us and gave us great confidence going into that first quarter. So, love to have him there, and might see him push in the midfield this week and get more touches and get involved, and we're really looking forward to that.
Now, Joel Selwood, he was out there today basically saying that all the West Aussie fans should join their bandwagon, go for the Cats. What do you have to say about that?
No doubt. Back for the Giants. Got it back to them. I'm sure WA love an underdog, so they're the favourites. You never jump on a bandwagon if they're favourites. You always want an underdog. So make sure the Perth get the orange out and support us hard.
Nick, very true. You fly to Perth tomorrow, as you said. Finally, believe some of the players got out on the course today. Confidence with your footy? Confidence with the stick in hand as well at the moment?
Yeah, not bad. We've actually been very lucky that there's zero wind at Barmbeers at the moment, which is very rare. So, hitting Jake Stein's golf clubs out this afternoon and hitting a couple of 300 plus on the drive. So, it was beautiful. Only one lost ball today, so we'll take that.
Good on you, Nick. Hopefully, there's no lost balls on Friday night at Optus Stadium when you take on the Cats. I meant that in the nicest possible way, of course. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day. It's been a great journey for the Giants this year. You've had your ups and your downs, but guess what? You're one win away from a prelim final. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day.
Thanks for having us, boys.
There it is, Nick Haynes from the Giants for Select Carcraft. Performing at the top for motor body repair since 1987. Visit car-craft.com.au.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day. It is almost 7:08 on this Monday night. Mark Redding's in for Carl Langdon. Paul Hayes will be joining you as well. Time for our Eagles update. Dig deep on Sports Day with Digger West. And Hayes, there's a bit of news emerging from the Eagles in the past 24 hours.
There is reports saying that Jamie Graham will not be at the West Coast Eagles next season. He's been in the running for the Collingwood job. He apparently auditioned really well with the interview that he did have, but he's been told he won't be getting that role. But for him to go to another club, I think he's really smart. You only have to look at Justin Longmuir, who left the Eagles, went to Collingwood, and also Sam Mitchell, who left his club, came to the West Coast Eagles. Both of those coaches now in the head coach position. So for him and his future, I think it's a great idea. But for the West Coast Eagles, they lose another one on the back of Hickmont, who's gone to the Hawthorn Football Club. Of course, Jared Schofield remains their number one target. They're trying to get in across from Port Adelaide. But Jamie Graham, not too far away from a head coaching position, but the extra experience, I think, will hold him in good stead.
Absolutely. You mentioned with Jared Schofield potentially coming home. He's done a pretty good job, let's be honest, with the Port mids and thereabouts, because they reached a prelim last year. They made a prelim already, potentially a grand final and a premiership to come. I know his family, Rebecca, and they've got young Taj, who's a young father-son prospect at Port Adelaide. So they've got a family tie to Adelaide, but
I think at some stage you want to get away from that, don't you? I think father-son involved, it gets a little bit difficult, particularly when he's now starting to push for selection. But you only have to look at that midfield and the growth of some of those players. Amon and Wines have gone to the next level, and Travis Boak back to where he was probably 5 or 6 years ago. So speak highly of him there, and I know the Subiaco players, they absolutely loved him, and I think he'd be a really good fit for that midfield at West Coast, which has struggled in recent times. The other news earlier on this afternoon from Peter Sumich, that Brad Shepherd, further precautionary test on concussion. He had two, and not big concussions, but that is the issue. I did speak to him on Saturday night at a function, and he did make mention of that, that he was having tests this week to get further information on that, but that'd be a big blow for the West Coast Eagles if they lost him.
Absolutely. You think of Dan Venables, who had that horrific incident at Optus Stadium against Melbourne in 2019. Brad Shepherd's incidents don't seem to have been that significant, but it's all cumulative, I suppose, in that sense.
And at the age of 30, too, you just start to wonder, well, you know, depending also where the West Coast Eagles are at. Of course, he missed that grand final, so he'd be driven to get back and have that one last chance, but he's got some big decisions, but it's only precautionary at this stage.
Yes, let's hope Brad Shepherd can get a good pre-season, as do a few of the West Coast Eagles senior players need to get themselves revitalised. That Eagles update for Digging Deep is what all great sports people do, just like the team at Digger West, the earth-moving attachments specialist. And of course, speaking of coaching, Collingwood, Craig McRae, the man likely to jump in and be the coach of the Magpies very shortly.
Done deal. Take it to the bank. Just getting signed off by the board. And when it gets to that stage, it normally gets done, because it wouldn't progress up to that stage if he wasn't the right man. Josh Carr, of course, speaking of coaches, a four-week suspension, four game that is. So he's already served two. He's got two more to go. $25,000 fine for the Fremantle Dockers. Pretty lucky there, I reckon. 25, given what we saw last year from some clubs. $50,000, $100,000. And the other news, Brian Cook is being headhunted by the Carlton Football Club. He's not going to make any comment until, of course, the Cats are knocked out.
Could it be Cook and Lyon running the Blues? Funny times, football. It's almost September, and we've got the news coming up shortly. Stay with us. This is Sports Day. It's 5 to 7.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Yes, heading towards the 7 o'clock news here on 882 6PR. Mark Reddings and Carl Langdon. Mark Reddings in for Carl Langdon, and Paul Hayes will be taking you through until 8 o'clock tonight. Coming up after the 7 o'clock news, we'll talk with Matty Hodgson, Director of Rugby at the Western Force. Of course, Super Rugby Pacific competition expanding from 10 to 12 teams. We know the Western Force back in action last season, did a terrific job. Can they replicate it moving forward? And Adam Jones, the WA talent manager, the State 19s beat South Australia last weekend. He'll tell us about some of those young players coming through the WA football system who are bound for the AFL. Of course, plenty of time for your calls on the open line, 133 882. We'll take you through until 8 o'clock tonight. Plenty of time for your calls and plenty of sport here on Sports Day. The 7 o'clock news, though, is next.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Crazy cheap prices on the free Spud Shed app. This electrifying moment of the weekend, with thanks to NHP Electrical Products, 100% Australian owned.
Coming through was Hunter, good work, picked it up, slammed it onto his boot, got it in there. Waitman could have been held! He has! And he's got it! He's got three! Who saw Waitman stepping up in a big final?
There it is, the Ox giving it full bore as Cody Waitman kicked four goals, four free kicks, and that is one of the NHP Electric moments of the weekend. NHP Electrical Products, 100% Australian-owned. Hayes, hey, poor old Cody caught some flack on the weekend for being the beneficiary of some free kicks.
It's not his fault, is it? He's just playing the game, and he played it pretty smart. There's a bit about the way that Toby Green plays and Cody Waitman, both very clever at their craft, and he just did what he had to do. He started really well, and I thought his intensity was good, and he got reward for effort, kicked the four goals, and in the end, in a low-scoring affair up until they blew the game open, he was the key player in that game. But what about the Bulldogs? Did you see enough from them to suggest that they can get their season back on track and maybe take down the Brisbane Lions and then head to Adelaide Oval to take on Port Adelaide?
I think they really turned the corner. Second half was very impressive, and we know their midfield's their most important weapon. So off the back of that, I think Saturday, a really intriguing game between Brisbane and the Bulldogs. Both sides have got the ability to essentially go through to a prelim and then cause Port Adelaide some trouble. So, look, I think the Bulldogs, it was important that they just had that second half, and it was a dominant second half. So there's a lot to like. Liberatore, the Bont. I think there's an upside for them, and other sides would be worried.
They were lucky, though, weren't they, at the half? They could have been down by 2-3 goals, in my opinion, if going through all the stats. The Bombers were well on top. It's their forward line that I have concerns over. Aaron Norton kicked 3. Cody Waitman got 4. Look, outside of that, you're looking, where's the next number of goals going to come from? Hannon can bob up as well, but, of course, Bruce going out has had some serious effect on them. But let's go back to the Friday night game, Port Adelaide and Geelong. They were good, weren't they, Port Adelaide? And they've timed it really well. But just the speed they had in their own forward line, it worried Geelong. And Geelong need to have things on their own terms. And when they can't control it, they can get opened up through the midfield and in the front half. And that's what happened with Fantasia. Very good. Motlop, Gray, Rosie, Butters. But they were just off. You could see that from the get-go. And the fact they were actually off on the back of being off the week before in the second half and giving up that big lead against Melbourne. There are some concerns there, but this is a team that's been there, done that, and their record in the first week of the finals has been so disappointing. But they've always found a way, and I get the feeling they're going to find a way again. I think they'll get across the Giants. No Toby Green, I'm expecting, and no Tom Green too. He's been ruled out with a broken arm. They'll bounce back. I think they'll win well, and then they go into the prelim final. Neutral territory against Melbourne. Pressure on Melbourne. I'm not writing the Cats off just yet. I think that they've got enough. What'd you make of also Paddy Dangerfield coming out today and, well, not him, but the club talking about him playing with a broken finger?
Yeah, well, I was down at East Fremantle today and watched Paddy just walk a lap or two, and they were obviously doing a lot of light work given it was a Monday, and a couple of sore bodies still from the Friday. And we are high markers for Paddy Dangerfield when it comes to producing in finals. We saw him off the ground in the last quarter against Melbourne when everyone's demanding he get out there and contribute on the weekend. Of course, no one was to know the injury he had from the outside. So, look, I expect a response from him. Hopefully, he's fit enough to play the role that we know he can on Friday night against the Giants. It'll be Joel Selwood's 334th game, which will break Corey Enright's game's record at the Cats. So, a special moment, although Tom Hawkins' 300th went down like a lead balloon as well. So it's been a really weird couple of weeks for the Cats, because at three-quarter time against Melbourne, they were 5 goals in front and one hand essentially on a top-two finish and essentially hosting a game in the first week of the finals, and they end up in Adelaide.
Is Dangerfield their most important player, that if they are any chance, he needs to get back to where he was? And in my opinion, he hasn't got back to where he was at all this year. I can't recall too many games where you say he's absolutely the best player on the ground. And for him to do that in finals is going to take a massive effort on the back of this injury and also the one he came back recently from.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although, when you look at their defence now, no Tom Stewart, his absence, Henry's been a really good player, the intercept marking he produces. But yeah, the Cats, put it this way, it's quite simple. If they get through to a grand final and win it, then the strategy has been rubber stamped. If they fall short and lose this weekend or even in the prelim final, I think the Cats' bid for a premiership, you'd have to ask questions whether that's it.
Would you bring in some speed? Narkle?
Yes.
Jordan Clark?
Certainly Narkle. At times I've seen him at Optus Stadium, like him, he gives them that breaking of the lines which the Cats appear to struggle with. Mitch Duncan was really good coming back into the side, but yeah, there's some work to do for the Cats, but I think they'll get across the line against the Giants. Conversely, of course, when you look at what happened on Saturday, a bit lucky the Giants to be in Perth tomorrow, given the inaccuracy of Sydney.
Favourites, Melbourne, clearly?
Not clearly, but I think they deserve to be favourites. And Port Adelaide on the second line, just because of what we saw, they get another home prelim final. They're timing their run very well.
They've got all the premiership credentials nailed for me. When you talk about momentum coming into finals and belief in their own system, belief in their defence, that's been the key pillar this year. And then you need the match winners. And they've got the match winners. They've got it in spades. Oliver outstanding again. Christian Petrarca, very, very good. Max Gawn stepped up. Fritz has been amazing in the forward line. He's now kicked 50 goals for the season. Ben Brown's going to be hard to stop in the finals as well. Pickett can kick the goals at ground level. And down back, May and Lever. They have got every position covered. And I think all roads lead to playing Melbourne and beating Melbourne to win this premiership.
Yeah, it should be a wonderful final series in Perth. Particularly, we've got three games. We're pretty sure, certainly this Friday night, a semi-final, a prelim final between Melbourne and the winner of the Giants and the Cats. And then the grand final, we think, will be confirmed possibly as early tomorrow. The Victorian government meeting with the AFL to essentially say, we're done, we're dusted. And September 25 looms as the most obvious date still.
And then Sydney and the Bombers. They're the two teams that have gone out. Good seasons, really, for both teams. I know Sydney would be really disappointed. They had 15 wins and they come up against a team that had 11 wins in the first week of the finals in the Giants and did everything, all bar get over the line and win that game. But with the introduction of so many good kids this year, they are well positioned for a crack at it in the coming years, provided Buddy can stay fit. And Isaac Heaney is the other one that needs to stay fit there. And the Bombers, where'd you have the Bombers at the start of the year? I'm not sure you had them playing in finals.
No, I didn't. So that's a good result for them. And the Giants, I think, also deserve Leon Cameron after what we saw against the Dockers early in the season. I thought he'd be lucky to survive the season. So that's a massive win for the Giants. Yeah, there's some teams that will be really happy with what they've achieved. Melbourne, obviously, is the standout with where they've come from and what they've done and how they've done it. Just makes you believe that you can turn around things in footy pretty quickly. And that's the exciting part about what confronts the Demons now.
Just with Sydney, some salary cap concerns, some real salary cap concerns. And we hear this all the time, but I think, you know, they are in trouble. And Luke Parker seems to be the one. He's 28. He's still their best player on the weekend outside of Isaac Heaney, I think, who kicked the four goals. Would you be letting a player go like that? Because he's a heart and soul guy too. He's a culture guy, but he needs to be paid because he has been a great player and he's still at that level. But with what's coming through, could they afford to let him go? I know David King said today he'd happily let him go because of the depth that they do have.
Yeah, he's a really good player and he's that inside bull, isn't he? So just remains to be seen what John Longmire thinks is at his disposal. We know there's young talent at the club and they don't bottom out too often, the Swans, do they? They've got this ability. Maybe the academy helps out, but they've got the ability to keep pushing up. And they'd be disappointed, obviously, bowing out in the first week because they had their eyes on a top four finish at one point. But I think in the cool light of day, they'll say, yep, we had a pretty good season, something to build on. And bear in mind, like the Giants, but Sydney Swans stayed out of a suitcase, essentially lived out of a suitcase for so long. It was extraordinary.
We don't talk about that enough, do we? Well, we talked last year when our teams had to get on the hub. And let's be honest, there was whinging from the West Coast Eagles. There was whinging from, you know, supporters of both clubs last year. These guys have done it tough for 10 weeks, hadn't seen their family. Their family did quarantine for 2 weeks. They finally got to catch up and then they were sent on the road once again. If the Giants do push on, it could be another month without their family. So I think we need to, as an industry, pay more respect to the sacrifice that they've put in.
Yes, some magic moments. In fact, NHP electrical products, 100% Australian owned and available at a recognised NHP wholesaler near you. They are our NHP electric moments from the weekend. Just a quick sports update for the Bottle-O. Got to love your local, the Bottle-O. What about in the EPL? Extraordinary start to the season for Tottenham Hotspur. They're 3 from 3. They're on top of the table. The likes of Man United in third spot, Chelsea 4th, Liverpool 5th, and Man City, the defending champion, 7th. But here's the big story. We can put slaps and sledges attached to this as well. Arsenal.
They must be 6th, are they?
Arsenal.
7th?
Arsenal.
8th?
Dead last.
What?
3 games, 3 losses, belted by City at the weekend, 5-0. Any Arsenal supporters out there? Well, I can tell you now, it could be a long season. They're calling for sackings already at this stage, and it's early days yet. But that's all part of our sports update for the Bottle-O. Got to love your local. Great range, friendly service, and they're independently owned by locals. Got to love your local. That is the Bottle-O. More of Sports Day coming up, including a chat with the Director of Rugby at the Western Force, Matty Hodgson. That's coming up next. It's 17 past 7.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Thanks for being part of Sports Day. Monday night, Mark Reddings alongside Paul Hazelby, 20 past 7. Exciting times for rugby in this state. Of course, the Bledisloe Cup on Sunday at Optus Stadium. The All Blacks, the Wallabies, huge crowd expected for that. On a more local perspective, Super Rugby Pacific competition is coming our way. It's been confirmed, and the Western Force will be part of this new 12-team competition. It kicks off in February next year. As I said, 12 teams, 18-week competition, 91 matches in total, and the GM of rugby at the Western Force, Matty Hodgson, joins us on the line for a chat about what's a very exciting venture. Hi, Matty, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is really something, as I said, exciting for the Western Force and for rugby fans off the back of coming back last season and doing such a good job in Super Rugby here in Australia.
Yeah, no, it's a great day and a great day for the fans and stuff to sort of continue to build that momentum of what we've done over the last 2 years. And I'm pretty excited to include Fiji and Moana Pacifica into the competition next year.
How much do you know about those two sides, and do you think they'll be competitive with you and also the other Australian teams and the Kiwi teams?
We know a fair bit about Fiji, obviously, with GRR World Series. We've played them a few times and sort of had a close relationship with them and know a number of their staff and stuff like that. So I think they'll be a pretty exciting team. Not too much about Moana. I know they're recruiting quite hard and looking at coaches, and I think they're putting a pretty good squad together. So it's exciting. I think it's going to be attacking football, and hopefully you see a few of those boys that won gold for Fiji out playing 15.
18-week competition, but 14 rounds, 7 home games. That would please many of your supporters who have done it pretty tough in recent times to get those home games.
Yeah, no, I think you saw last year with the crowd we were bringing in. It's pretty exciting, and to be able to lock in 7 home games and build momentum throughout the year and turn the stadium into a bit of a fortress would be pretty exciting. So we're keen to sort of see the draw now and sort of start locking the things in and sell the memberships and start the ball rolling for 22.
Well, you're going to play finals, and there's a new finals competition there. 8 in the finals. Can you talk through us how that's going to work? Because it's different to what we know in some other sports.
Yeah, no, it's pretty exciting to be able to have a quarterfinals, semi-finals, and then finals. So, obviously, the quarterfinals, top 8, and so sort of works out 1v8, and then 2v7, and so on, with the top 4 teams hosting. When it goes through into a semi-final sort of campaign, it ends up being the top 4 again, and then the 2 winners of them go into the GF, and hopefully we can host the GF at the stadium next year.
So no double chance for the top 4 teams. It's cutthroat once they make the finals.
Yeah, it's pretty full on. The benefit they get is obviously higher in the ladder. You theoretically play a lower ranked team and host at home. But as you know, finals football, anyone turns up and they can win. So yeah, it's cutthroat. And it's something that we've been used to for the last few years during rugby, is you've got to win on the day.
We're speaking to the GM of rugby at the Western Force, Matty Hodgson, on Sports Day. Tell us about your squad, Matt. Coming together well. How many more pieces of the puzzle do you have to put together?
Only one big jigsaw to go. So trying to fill that out and look globally for that position, both locally for that. Sort of changed our philosophy, or not changed, just restructured our philosophy a little and gone for a younger squad and build it over the next 3 to 4 years. A combination of a lot of local players and a lot of up-and-comers that should be Wallabies within a few years, but then keeping a lot of the rugby IP with Ian Pryor, Richard Kahui, Jeremy Thrush, Greg Holmes and the likes going around for another year. But also putting a lot of time into our academy space. We're sort of bringing a lot of players through in that 18-year-old bracket. So when their chance comes in 1 or 2 years, they're not a deer in headlights, and they're actually used to what a professional rugby player is used to. So it's pretty exciting over the next sort of 5 years for the Force.
Next 5 months, I suppose, you've got to prepare. But in these COVID times, do you have to have contingency plans already in place just in case we're not where we hope we are with border restrictions and travel?
Yeah, so I know we've done a fair bit of that in 2020. We went into a hub for 70-odd days in Sydney and Queensland. This year we're lucky we only had to do one hotel quarantine in Canberra. So we've got many different contingencies, and I know they're looking at when we travel to New Zealand and the like, it'll be double headers, so you don't have to come back and forth, so remove a bit of the risk there. I know Fiji are looking at Townsville and Queensland areas to host many of their games, and the Pacifica being based in South Auckland there. So we've already started that planning process. And yeah, it's one of the things these days, you have plan A, B and C, and anyone can happen at any time.
It's a big weekend for all those rugby fans. Bledisloe Cup game 3. What do the Wallabies need to do to turn this around?
Well, I think the first thing is good to see the All Blacks actually turn up. So that's
good start. Good
and then pretty much use the same blueprint as when we played them in 19 here. I think 64,000 screaming Western Australians cheering for the Wallabies was pretty exciting. And knowing sitting in the crowd, seeing how loud the crowd actually got behind them. And I think the Wallabies need to start the way they started that game, fast and up tempo, and a bit of unpredictable nature of their game would go a long way. And like most things, if you win the toughness and the breakdown era of the game, you should win the game. So I'm expecting them to come out firing in that first 20 and probably use a bit of that angst and anger that we had last week when we were meant to play them, transfer that into Sunday.
A bit parochial, but from a Western Force perspective for Sunday, who can we look forward to running out representing our country?
I know it'd be pretty exciting to see Tom Robinson be able to put on the yellow again. And I know, talking to a few of the Wallaby coaches, they've been very impressed the way Isaac Rodder's sort of trained and got back into peak Australian or Pacific condition after spending 6 months over in France. So those two would be exciting. And I think seeing Paletti, someone that's come through our pathway, we gave him an opportunity, and then see him go all the way to play for Australia would be something pretty special for him and the club.
Hey, Matty, when it comes to, you just mentioned the Bledisloe Cup, it's in Perth again, the new Super Rugby Pacific competition. Go back 2-3 years ago when, of course, times are very tough. Did you ever think you'd get back to the day where rugby was back front and centre in the spotlight in this state?
Yeah, we always had hope and we always had ambition. Probably the thing that shocked us most is how quickly and how well we've responded to the challenges that have been put in our place. I quite often joke that we're probably the only sporting team in the world that's happy that COVID came along, because it put us in this position we are now. So I knew we'd always get back there. We always deserve to be back on the main stage. And I think now we're showing what we can deliver from a rugby team, from a rugby state. And now the next step is for us to maintain and go again to another level, but then also get the number of Western Australians representing our country. Once I get that box ticked, I can go on my first holiday.
That would be nice. You've done a good job. I think it was only just over 12 months ago we're talking about Global Rapid Rugby and all the work that you had done to put that together with Andrew Forrest. And then 12 months later, here we are with this competition. It is terrific. Now, Matty, I'm not sure if you crossed the AFL, but we've had an incident with an umpire. And we've been talking about that tonight. We've been talking about the respect from your sport towards the umpires. Where do you think that comes from? And why is it so good that you treat the umpire with so much respect, not only as players, but also as supporters?
We've always grown up with the referee's going to make mistakes and he's going to make a decision. And I think you ask everyone in the sporting code, has the ref ever changed his mind? And the answer is always no. So I don't know why people argue. You just have to get on with it and move on. But I think, yeah, there's some unfortunate incidents that happen, and you got to remember the referee's part of the game. And if you don't show him respect at the top level, you're not going to get him at the bottom level, and therefore your game will fall apart. And I know the pressures that referee can hold now after refereeing 2 under-8 games on the weekend. So it's something that it's part of the game, and they're human as well. Imagine if the referees blew up the players for keep knocking the ball on or making errors. It'd be a different story for sure.
Just quickly, on Sunday, weather fine, beautiful day. Father's Day, mind you, coming up, and it's going to be an exciting adventure to see how many fans get to Optus Stadium. What do you reckon, Matt? What's a big tick for rugby in this state? If all things being equal, we can get a crowd of what number?
Well, I think with all the disadvantages with the border shuts and stuff like that, I still reckon we'll get over 50,000. And what I'm saying, it's pretty special. I get to take my kids to watch the game, and it's not often that you get to a Sunday afternoon test match where the kids can actually be part of the game and watch it and be part of the fanfare and stuff like that. So it's pretty exciting from a parent's point of view, given that opportunity for kids to go watch the Sunday afternoon football. and I was involved in. I was in the test match when Australia played Samoa on a Sunday, so I know how special it is to play from a player's point of view in daylight football. And it's not often that you get to play in the afternoon professionally anymore in rugby, so I think you'll see a fast game. So anyone that doesn't have a ticket, definitely rock up on the day, and it should be a great day.
Do you see a time in the future, maybe this new competition, the grand final here at Optus Stadium, Western Force, packing that out also?
That's the plan. If anyone knows Andrew, he's not happy with 15,000 or 20,000 sold out. So we aim high, and there's nothing better. I think if there's 60,000 that can get to a test match, why not enjoy the Western Force week in, week out, to see the same type of rugby, the same players on stage. So we love people coming to watch test matches, but it's even better for us if they come week in, week out and celebrate the Western Force. And who knows how far we can take this thing with the support we've got locally and from Andrew and the like. So the more people come watch us and get behind the Force, the more reward we can give the fans back.
Yeah, Matty, I reckon Twiggy's pretty happy with the new Western Force rugby competition. The iron ore price is going well. Life is good for the owner. Thank you for being part of Sports Day. Enjoy the Bledisloe Cup. Enjoy the hard work that goes with putting together this new Super Rugby Pacific competition.
No worries. Yeah, thanks again for your time. And there is. Anytime.
Good on you, Matty Hodgson, the General Manager of Rugby at the Western Force. And yes, we can't wait to see the best of the best strut their stuff 2 o'clock on Sunday at Optus Stadium as the Wallabies try to get one back against the All Blacks who've been dominant for so long. Coming up after the break, we're going to chat with Adam Jones, a WA talent manager at the WA Football Commission, talking about the emerging 19s carnival. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day Monday night, talking football, and we head straight to the emerging stars in our state of Western Australia, WA talent manager at the WA Football Commission's Adam Jones. He's been keeping a close eye on the 19s as they build towards, hopefully, a success individually and as a team. Adam, thanks for your time on Sports Day.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
Talk us through what happened on Saturday against South Australia. Finally, not playing against themselves in scratch matches or waffle Colts and reserves teams. Real opposition that they could test their skills against.
Nah, absolutely. The boys were pumped to get a game away, albeit having a small scare on Friday Arvo with the truckies coming into WA. But we got the game away, and the boys came out firing like they'd been wanting to play this for 12 months. So we got off to a really hot start, and SA sort of pegged a little bit even in the second quarter. And then we sort of kicked away and kept them scoreless in the third, where the game was sort of out of reach. And then, yeah, the last quarter, SA kicked a couple more than what we did. But, no, we had a terrific game. The boys were fantastic, cracked in from the start. And, yeah, I think a number of them have really put their hand up. Given that, you know, recruiters aren't going to have a lot to go off, it's a fantastic one to put your hand up in.
Let's go into some of the individual players and how they went in the contest. There would have been a few that put their names up in lights.
No, absolutely. Probably led from our midfield brigade, Angus Sheldrick and Kay Dittmar, two inside bulls. They came out firing and were fantastic. And Matty Johnson, he's played a little bit of league football for Subiaco. He had a really strong game as well. We'd spoken about previously our key position players, and they didn't disappoint. Jai Amos up forward, he kicked two goals. Probably could have kicked a few more, but took some really impressive marks and showed some really good signs. We sent Jacob Van Ruin down back, and I think he's glad we did because he was exceptional. Probably what was the best on-ground performance. He just looked powerful and strong and took intercept marks. And yeah, he's really put his name up as a possible key defender, but also clubs knowing that he can play forward. And another one that played really well down back was Rhett Bazo, who spent a little bit of time forward in the Colts this year. We've been playing him predominantly as that sort of third tall defender. And, yeah, he intercepted really well, uses it nicely out of the back line. So, yeah, he put his name up as well, just to name a few of the guys.
When you look at the draft picks that the West Coast Eagles and the Fremantle Dockers have, who would you select if you're in those positions? We'll start with the Fremantle Dockers. Clearly, in my opinion, they need some key forwards coming in. It's a good year for them potentially to have some early picks.
No, you're spot on, Hayes. Like I mentioned, Jai Amos, he should be, you know, right at the top of their hit list. We got Jack Williams, who I didn't mention. He played a really strong game as well. Kicked one goal too, took nine marks on the day. Yeah, a little bit inaccurate in front of goal, but he's one that they could be looking at. So they're two key positions. And then we've got Eric Benning, who's a key position for backup ruck. He's an NGA prospect for Fremantle. He took two really nice contested marks, looked good at ground level, and showed that he could be a player of the future. So, you know, there are a couple of names for Fremantle. Then West Coast, they're going to be looking to replenish some of their older stocks, I guess. So, some of our good mids, like Matty Johnson, just showed his class. He's 192 centimetres. A little bit like a Dave Mundy or a Chera type sort of mid, really, really classy. So, you know, he's one that would attract their attention. And a couple of the other inside bulls that we had in Angus Sheldrick, Kate Dickmar, just two fierce competitors, and their contested ball and clearance winning ability is fantastic.
Erasmus didn't play on the weekend, but he'd be highly touted as a midfielder for both sides.
No, that's right. We lost him last week and probably was, you know, heading in as our best midfielder or certainly up there as one of the best. So, yeah, he's another, you know, modern-day mid, 190 centimetres. He could play forward. He kicked four goals in the Colts grand final last year as a forward, but this year he's honed his craft on ball. He's our best endurance runner just goes all day, finds the footy. So, we missed him, or we thought we were going to miss him on the weekend, but the rest of the team stood up in his absence.
Adam Jones from the WA Football Commission we're chatting with. Just tell us, Jonesy, from an AFL perspective, do clubs like to see these young players get an opportunity, say, waffle league level, to get an idea of how they would perform against the bigger bodies? And I saw, of course, Van Ruin play for Claremont against South Fremantle, didn't get much of the footy. Do clubs like to see that before they roll the dice with them or not?
No, absolutely, Skeet. It's one of the big advantages we've got over the Victorian boys, where our pathway transitions directly to the senior football and the boys stay at the same club, obviously. So it's a huge advantage to be able to play league football, and I think recruiters would hold it, you know, in a similar regard to the state championships. And if guys can prove themselves at league football at this age, you know, it's a very good sign that they're going to be able to translate that to AFL.
What can you tell us? There's a bit of talk about a potential game, given the grand final we think is going to be in WA, as a curtain raiser, or even played before one of the finals over the next two or three weeks. What are you hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're looking at all options to be able to get games away, and that's sort of one option that's been thrown up. We're obviously going to have to wait for confirmation of where the grand final is going to be played, but you know, it's obviously looking pretty good. But we're also looking at options in early October, once the waffle season's finished, to play an additional game, because obviously the guys aren't playing the four games that we were originally scheduled to play. So we're certainly looking at all options. And now that we've gotten through this game, we'll put a bit more focus on those games over the coming weeks.
What about Taj Woden, son of Shane? Obviously be a father-son prospect, wouldn't he, for the Melbourne Football Club? Is that likely to happen?
Yeah, Hayes, he was really, really solid on the weekend. He played off a wing for us and had 20 touches. So he's been one of the great improvers this year. And no surprise when you get to know him. He's a super professional kid, does everything right. And you know, he's really taken on board a lot of the feedback. And he's been a very versatile player as well. Sort of half forward wing, on ball, and even half back. So I think the D's fans are excited. They've got a really, really good player, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't end up at Melbourne at the end of the year.
Speaking father-sons, I've seen a fair bit of footy Alco Cup-wise and a league game for what it's worth. Jesse Motlop, of course, Daniel's son. Where does, I know the academy situation's on the horizon for him, but where will he end up, do you think?
Yeah, Jesse was terrific on Saturday. Yeah, he didn't probably hit the scoreboard as much as he liked. He kicked one fantastic crumbing goal. Had a player not far away from him, his opponent, but he was just so clean and in great position and a quick snap. I thought his pressure on the weekend was just outstanding. Kept the ball in our forward line quite often and didn't get used all the time where we thought he was free, so he could have even had a better game. So no, he's an exciting prospect, Jesse, and I would dare say that, sadly for Frio fans, you know, he is an NBA prospect, but if you take it inside the top 40, he'll end up going to the club that calls his name out. And I have a suspicion that he's going to go inside the top 40, unfortunately, for Fremantle guys.
One guy that's going to go in the top 40 is Jason Horne-Francis from Adelaide. Played 25 Sandful games already. Played on the weekend. Did he look like a potential number one pick to you?
He certainly didn't have his best game, Hayes, but there were glimpses where you thought, geez, this kid is very talented. Some of his use going inside 50 was exceptional. He looked very clean. He almost took mark of the year. He got up on one of our guys' shoulders and looked dangerous. But I think he was a little bit shocked by the physicality of a couple of our guys, and it was certainly a quieter game for him, but the glimpses were there that he's going to be a very good player. Yeah.
Adam Jones, always a pleasure to talk. Young talent in WA, and we know the draft, it's going to be another tricky one for all concerned, given the lack of football for those in Victoria and elsewhere around the country. But fortunately, touch wood, we can continue to get some games into our young players here. Great job so far and what you're producing in the WA football system, and may it continue. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Anytime.
There it is, Adam Jones, the WA talent manager at the WA Footy Commission. As we said, maybe there'll be a couple of matches during the AFL final series as curtain raisers. Stay with us. Plenty more to come on Sports Day. Mark Reddings and Paul Hayes will be with you on this Monday night. Welcome back to Sports Day Monday night. Mark Reddings and Paul Hayes will be with you. Time now for the Kia Top 7. And Hayes has been mulling over some of these for the last 15 or 20 minutes, all courtesy of the new Kia Niro electric SUV range, which has landed.
Top 7 underperforming stars from the weekend. Now, it's big time footy. You want your big guns to come out to play. And I'm going to start with Peter Wright. Now, I've got him up there because of the season that he's put together. 29 goals. He's kicked recently 7 goals. Last time he played the Bulldogs, he kicked 7 goals. He kicked 4 goals last week. Guess what he got on the weekend? Big donut. 7 touches, Peter Wright. I know the conditions conducive, but he had to do more than that with Harrison Jones out. He had to step up in the big final. He didn't. He'll learn from it, but a good season nonetheless.
That being said, he's been a successful pickup for the Bombers. They got him for next to nothing.
I can't believe the Gold Coast Suns got rid of a player. Didn't even play him last year, Stuart Jew. And then you hear reports that they want to go get Rory Lobb. Same type of player. He was sitting there. You let him go for nothing. Come on, Stuart. You could be better than that. Let's go to 6. That goes to Jake Stringer, his teammate. Now, he should have been in the All-Australian for mine. He should have got in the forward pocket ahead of Tom Papley. But on the weekend, he only had the 9 disposals. He kicked the 2 goals, had a chance to kick 3 late in the game, and he would have got off the list, but he missed that one. But look, his centre bounce work has been terrific all year, but it was missing when the big moments mattered. And he had 2 teammates that did well through that part of the ground in Merritt and also Darcy Parrish, but they would have loved more from Jake Stringer on the weekend. At number 5, and he's there a lot of the time when you talk about big finals, and it's an issue for him that he needs to work through, and he gets another chance. I'm talking about Gary Rowan from the Geelong Football Club. Started in the forward line, and Alia just had a field day early on in that game. If you're not going to win the ball, you make sure your star defender doesn't get too much ball. Great intercept marker is Alia. He didn't do that. They had to move him out of the forward line. That's how bad he was. He went to the defence. His numbers looked okay at the end of the game, but the damage was done early, and he needs to bounce back, Gary Rowan.
Hard thing about Gary Rowan is because he's got all the tricks, we know what he can do. It must be frustrating for Chris Scott. Do you punish him by not playing him on Friday night? You can't do that because you know Next start, he's likely to kick three or four goals.
Yeah, and provide a lot of pressure. That's what he can do, and he's that medium-sized player that I think every club needs. The next one is Tom McDonald. Now, he's in a winning team, but if you only have four disposals in a final, it's not good. He was lucky he had Ben Brown and Bailey Fritz and Pickett got the job around him, but he's one that has and can improve going forward into the next game. The next one's Joel Selwood. Now, Patrick Dangerfield left off the list because, yeah, he was okay. He had 24 disposals.
And injured.
But do you take that into account? It was interesting to hear them come out and talk about that today. But Joel Selwood, we know that he is a legend. He's a star, and he thrives in that environment. The number of finals that I've seen him just say, boys, get on my back. I'm going to win this. He needed to do that on Friday night, and he couldn't do it. I know he's getting older, and maybe that's the issue, but 17 disposals in a big game wouldn't sit well with him.
Big night on Friday for him. He goes past Corey Enright's club record of 333 games. He tied it, of course, in the qualifying final. He's a very proud man. He was beaten up in the midfield in the sense of the footy being stolen from him time and time again on the weekend. So I'm sure he'll be stung by that. I went and saw him and his teammates train at East Fremantle today. Light session, but you just get the feeling that Joel Selwood's got one more to throw at the grand final.
I'm not writing him off, the Cats. I reckon they'll win this week, and then they take on Melbourne. All the pressure in the world will be on Melbourne that weekend. I know everybody expects Geelong, with the list that they've got, they need to play in the grand final, but they will come again. They're experienced. Lachie Henderson, though, he's not going to break that record at Geelong if he keeps playing like he did on Friday night. That was the worst I've seen him, and he's been a really good pickup, and then he lost his way, and then the last 2 years he's been brilliant again for that side, but he looked old, he looked slow, very fumbly, and he missed a lot of skill execution opportunity. So the spotlight goes on to Lachie Henderson as well. But number one was Harris Andrews from the Brisbane Lions.
Mm.
So disappointing. Back into the team off a hamstring injury. So maybe he wasn't quite right. But he looked slow. He was very slow to react. That defensive intensity that we know and love about him just wasn't there. He didn't even want to close down the space with the player that he was on. Time and time again, he was just slow and needs to be better with his reaction time. I think they go with him. He's the leader of that team, particularly the defence, but he would want to sharpen up if the Brisbane Lions are to get through the Bulldogs this week.
In racing parlance, Harris Andrews, you'd say it's a forgive run because he's shown so much for so long that you'd expect him at the Gabba to bounce back against the Bulldogs, who might not have that tall option apart from Aaron Norton that could trouble them in the air. So
second up from a spell, if we're talking about racing, he might be a bit better.
Perhaps. We're hoping, if you're a sympathiser of the Brisbane Lions, your top seven for Kia, very slick haze for the all-new Kia Niro electric SUV range, available as a hybrid, plug-in hybrid and full electric. We go to the player of the round for expert car service you can rely on. Visit repcoservice.com. Hayes had a few to choose from over the weekend. There were some quality performances, particularly from winning teams.
Yeah, there was, but I settled on Clayton Oliver. He couldn't get Brownlow votes, but I reckon he's got the Brownlow. That last round that he produced against Geelong and then this one, he's in great form. Best midfielder in the comp right now. The speed that he goes through the contest and how clean he is, but he's added to his game this year. He's actually kicking the ball. He's been a high score involvement player. He had 10 on the weekend to go with a goal himself and 33 disposals. That's a complete performance. And it's been great to watch the evolution of this kid, because when he came into the team, pick number four, early on, he had so much talent, so much class, but probably lacked the selfish nature, the selfless nature in his game. He's now got that. It's team first all the time. He's an absolute beauty, and I think he's going to be taking home Charlie.
There it is, player of the round. Big call from Hayes for expert car service. Book into your local Repco authorised service centre. Back to wrap up Sports Day. Been a big Monday night on Sports Day. Great to have your company. And on this day for Bower and O'Day, because the little things are everything, 2012 American tennis star Andy Roddick announced he will retire following the US Open. Bower and O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Huge show coming up tomorrow night, the Toby Green decision and potentially the announcement of the AFL Grand Final. Will it be coming here to Perth? Up next, after the news, it's Todd Johnson with the night shift. This has been Sports Day. Great to have your company.